T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Okay, engine stop. CPA at a descent. Motor control, both auto descent, engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here.
My guest on Cosmic Perspective Radio is planetary astronomer Dr. Heidi Hamel. Dr. Hamel is here with us today to discuss what scientists have confirmed to be the discovery of the first comet from another solar system. Dr. Hamel, thanks for joining us on Cosmic Perspective Radio.
I'm delighted to be here.
I've had the pleasure to meet you a few times over the years at the Discovery Museum in Bridgeport, Connecticut, Westport Astronomical Society, and a long time ago, at Astronomy Day at the Boston Museum of Science.
Wow. Yeah, that was a while ago. Gosh.
Yes, that's somewhere around the mid-90s, I'm going to guess. So it's a real pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you.
Thanks. It's always great to be talking to my Connecticut people again.
Well, this is exciting. Thanks for being on. The second visitor from outside our solar system discovered in the last 2 years, and this one's a comet. When and how was the comet Borisov discovered?
Yeah, this comet was discovered just a few months ago in late August of 2019. An amateur astronomer in the Ukraine, Gennady Borisov, was making observations with his pretty large amateur telescope, and he spotted this moving object, and he reported it to the Minor Planet Center. Many other people started observing it as well. And this comet was fuzzy. It wasn't a point source. It was a blurry little object, and so it was designated a comet. But after it had been observed for several weeks, its orbit could be computed. And that orbit told us that this object was not in orbit around our star, the Sun. In fact, this object came from interstellar space and was winging its way through our solar system, making a moderately close pass to the Sun, which took place just a day or two ago, and is now on its way back out into the depths of interstellar space.
I understand that the Hubble Space Telescope has played a big role in observing this comet.
That's right. Hubble has made a couple of observations for each of the past 3 months. And the most recent observations made just a few days ago help us, using Hubble's very sharp resolution, to put limits on the size of the nucleus. That's the center of the comet. That's the actual hard body that is the object that we call a comet. And interestingly, it's not as big as we thought it was going to be. And by knowing its size, that helps us understand how many more of these objects may be out there. It'll help us determine where they are, when they come through, things like that. I just want to be clear, though, when I say not as big as we thought, it's still pretty big. To use layman's terms, if you imagine taking our standard regulation American football field and laying 7 of them end to end, or actually 9 of them end to end, that's about the size of the object at the center of this comet. So 9 U.S. football fields. That's pretty big. It's a pretty big object.
That is pretty big. Now, how does that compare to other comets in our solar system? in size of the nucleus?
Yeah, so comets come in whole ranges of sizes. Some comets are pretty small, like maybe a 1 football field. Other comets are much larger. The comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 that eventually crashed into Jupiter 25 years ago, we think that the parent body of that comet before it broke up was well over 1.5 miles across. So comets can range in size.
So this isn't any unusual size compared to our solar system comet.
No. You know what? It's funny. It's a bit of a paradox that, or irony perhaps, that I think what's exciting about this comet is how not unusual it is, if you will. It's about the standard size of a comet. It's moving maybe a little faster than some comets in our solar system, but not out of scope for fast-moving comets. And the hints that we're getting of its composition are not that different from comets in our solar system. And so that's intriguing. Its very normalcy makes it intriguing, because coming from another planetary system, it tells you that the fragments that formed that other planetary system are not that different from the fragments that formed our planetary system. And that's intriguing.
I think that's really interesting that it's possible that other solar systems were formed the same way ours was then, basically.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly it. We've had some hints of that. We do look at disks forming around other stars, and we get hints into, you know, what the materials are that form those disks, and we can learn things that way. We look at planets around other stars. We now know of thousands of planetary systems around other stars, but all of those are done, you know, with they're you know, gazillions of miles away, and we can't really focus in and get specific chemistry of specific objects. It's more generalities. What we have with this comet is a piece of another planetary system delivered to our own, and fortunately, all of our telescopes were ready to observe it. Hubble was still working at the peak of its game and got some of the finest, most highest resolution images of this comet as it made its closest approach to the sun. And we'll continue to watch this object as it moves further away from the sun.
Yeah, this is very special. What kind of intrigues me also is that the scientists theorize that there's a large group of comets on the far reaches of our solar system in this cloud called the Oort cloud. Is it possible that this comet came from another solar system, from a cloud, or could it be a rogue comet? Do we have any idea what it may be?
Yeah, I will share with you that we planetary astronomers are having active discussions amongst ourselves about that very topic. The specific orbit that this object is on, the direction that it came from, the speed it's moving with, that is what is suggesting to us that this is an interstellar visitor and not a rogue member of our Oort cloud. Oort cloud comets, they're still bound to our solar system very weakly, but they still have very long elliptical orbits that would be circular in nature. So that's what distinguishes this from an Oort cloud comet. But your question's a great one, and as to whether this was from an Oort cloud around a different star, we simply don't know the answer to that. That's one reason we want to study its composition very carefully and try to learn as much as possible about it while it's here, so that we can compare it to comets in our planetary system, whether they're local or Oort cloud comets, and try to figure out the answer to the question you're asking.
Yeah, that's what science is all about. It's so interesting. And we're so fortunate to have an object like this come into our solar system. Another thing I'm thinking about is that as scientists, as we track the comet's orbit, we can also figure out its period. As scientists have an idea of, like, let's say the comet survived, what its period is, would it come back to the solar system again?
Well, this particular comet, 2I Borisov, we think will not come back into our solar system. The shape of its orbit is what we call, in geometrical terms, a hyperbole. It's a curved shape that does not close into an oval or a circle. So this object will not return to us. We're quite confident of that.
Now that the comet has come around the other side of the sun, will amateur astronomers be able to see them in smaller telescopes?
So with small telescopes, I don't think you're going to have a chance to see this comet. It's a very faint comet. You need a big telescope. And you know, some amateurs do have big telescopes. And by big, I mean half a meter or larger. So, you know, your standard garden variety Celestron 8-inch telescope or even a 16-inch telescope, I don't think you're going to be able to see this comet with that kind of telescope. So you'll have to either, you know, get yourself to an observatory that does have a large telescope, or you'll just have to appreciate the images that are going to be posted online from Hubble and from other ground-based telescopes like Keck, Gemini, many of the other large facilities. They will be posting their images online.
That's a wonderful thing. That's a great thing that we have all these telescopes following this object and being able to capture such great images. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, sometimes I get asked, like, why does every telescope need to look at it? And the answer is we have different kinds of equipment on the different telescopes, and they all study the comet in different ways. Hubble, you're getting super high resolution images, so very good image quality, and you're also getting blue and ultraviolet wavelengths of light that are not accessible to telescopes on the ground. The Keck Observatory, on the other hand, is one of the largest telescopes in the world, and so it has even better resolution than Hubble, but not in the ultraviolet, in the blue wavelengths. Its forte is the red and the near-infrared wavelengths. And so we use different telescopes to probe different colors, different kinds of expected chemistry that we can see, and we try to put together our understanding based on all of the observations from all of the different telescopes.
It would be very interesting to see what the composition is once we study it more, to see how it really compares to comets in our own solar system.
Yeah, everyone's very intrigued by that. And I'll share with you something that I find actually pretty exciting, is that the composition so far seems pretty similar to comets in our own solar system in terms of the kinds of ices that we're detecting. And that's intriguing to me. One of the questions that I'm personally very interested in is whether or not there's life elsewhere in the cosmos. And the fact that we know of thousands of planetary systems now means we have a lot of potential targets. But we haven't known to date, you know, whether planetary systems are like ours or are they very different from ours. So this first interstellar comet, its message that it's carrying to us is that at least one planetary system out there seems to have formed in a very similar way to the way our planetary system formed. And I find that hopeful that maybe someday our search for life elsewhere might be successful.
That is very exciting, especially since we think that comets come from the early solar system, our early solar system. So here's another traveler from an early part of another solar system visiting us with a similar composition. That is exciting. You'd mentioned about the Hubble Space Telescope. It'll be the 30th anniversary of the Hubble's operation next year.
Yeah, 30 years since its launch. And so that's an exciting milestone. It's been 10 years since it was last serviced. Remember that Hubble is in a low Earth orbit, so it's circling the Earth. And for the first 15 years of its existence, it was serviced regularly. There have been 5 servicing missions to Hubble by astronauts who have taken out old pieces of equipment, put in new pieces of equipment, new cameras, new sensors, and other new equipment to keep the telescope healthy. The last servicing mission was 10 years ago, and all of the instruments are still working great. You know, it's an aging spacecraft, so occasionally there are little glitches of things that happen. The gyroscopes are getting a little wonky with age. The team that operates Hubble and the team that manages Hubble for the science community is always attentive to its health and its operational modes. And so we think very carefully, well, if this happens, what do we do? Or if that happens, what do we do? So we're prepared for a variety of expected eventualities. And so hopefully, knock on wood, we will keep observing with Hubble for quite a number of years to come.
And of course, what's also exciting is the James Webb Telescope.
Absolutely. I am very excited about the James Webb Space Telescope. It's a project I personally have been working on for over 20 years, including the 13 years that I lived there in Connecticut. I was working on the James Webb Space Telescope project. And I'm hoping that Hubble will survive long enough to be operational at the same time as Webb. And the reason I'm hoping that is that these are very different telescopes. Webb is not just a bigger version of Hubble. Webb is designed to do a very different kind of observation than Hubble is designed to do. It's going to be doing imaging, absolutely, just like Hubble does, but its primary wavelength coverage is going to be more in the red and in the infrared. And that complements Hubble, which focuses on sort of the red, but the blue and ultraviolet. So if we use both of these telescopes together, we will have the full spectrum of light available to us from objects like Borisov, objects like the planets Uranus and Neptune, distant galaxies, stars that are being born. We need all the colors of light to truly understand the phenomena that are taking place out there in the cosmos. And so Hubble and Webb together will be a mighty powerful tool to explore.
Very exciting. When is the James Webb Telescope, is there a launch date determined at this point?
Our current launch window is in March of 2021, and so we are working hard to get there. Right now, the spacecraft itself is in a clean room, that's a chamber where they assemble spacecraft, out in California. And one of the most exciting things that happened in the past year with the Webb project is they took the optics, the mirrors that focus the light, and they mated them together with the spacecraft and the sun shield that protects this telescope from light from the sun and light from the Earth. I just want to say, Webb is not going to be in a low Earth orbit like the Hubble. Webb is actually going to be sent on a very powerful rocket, and it's going to be moved out into outer space about 1,000,000 miles away from the Earth in such a place that it is protected from the Earth's light and sunlight. That special place is called the Lagrange 2 point. It's not going to be serviceable by astronauts because it's going to be very, very far away. So it's a very challenging and difficult prospect to put it so far away. But the telescope itself is now, all the pieces are put together, and they are now doing the final testing of the various components. So great progress has been made. And as a scientist who's been working on this project for 20 years, you know, people ask me, well, does it upset you if they delay the launch date? And I say, well, look, I've been waiting 20 years. I don't mind waiting 21 years if it means we're going to have a successful launch and a fabulous telescope. I'll wait 22 years. I'll wait 23 years. I'll wait whatever it takes to get a fully functional and wonderful operating telescope.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. And as you mentioned, what most people don't realize is, you know, the Hubble was serviced, but the James Webb Telescope will be too far away for servicing.
Yeah, that's right.
So we want to get it right the first time.
Yeah, that's right. You want to get it right the first time, and you want to do all the testing you can now. People sometimes wonder, oh, I heard a bad story about Webb. Something went wrong. And I'm like, well, yeah, we're testing it right now. And the reason we're testing it is to find out things that aren't working so that we can fix them. That's the whole point of this phase right now of testing the spacecraft. So I don't get worried when I hear about something, James Webb, some of them. I'm like, yeah, well, I'm glad we found it here before we launched it. that's what we're supposed to do. So, but I have great faith in the team. I have great faith in the team at NASA, great faith in the team at Northrop Grumman, the lead contractor, and all the other companies that have worked so hard over the last couple of decades to make James Webb. So I'm very excited about it.
Dr. Hamill, thanks for joining us today on Cosmic Perspective Radio, sharing all your information about this wonderful comet and, of course, the Hubble Space Telescope and James Webb Telescope. So thanks again for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Where can our listeners learn more about Comet Borisov, the Hubble Space Telescope, and of course the James Webb?
Your best resource for information is go to nasa.gov/Hubble, and you'll be able to find stories and pictures about Borisov and about Hubble itself. You can also follow Hubble on social media at NASA Hubble.
Dr. Hamill, thanks so much for being with us again. And the invitation's open for you to come back and talk about James Webb or Hubble. It'd be great to have you come back on again.
All right, thanks. We'll try to make that happen.
Thanks again.
It's great to talk with you again, Andy.
Cosmic Perspective is an Andy Panero's production.